First, for many people, the pandemic has resulted in some big changes in the way we work, including where we work, how much we work, and what's expected of us. It also has some people reconsidering the idea of a four-day work week. And we're not necessarily talking about working four 10-hour days, but maybe fewer hours overall with no change in pay. Spain is about to experiment with a 32-hour work week, though a lot of the details are still up in the air for a pilot project. According to The Guardian, the trial could begin this fall and last 3 years at a cost of nearly $60 million. Some researchers and advocates say the lighter load would improve an employee's work-life balance and increase productivity. There are concerns, though, about staffing and scheduling challenges. Tell us what you think of the idea now at 800-642-1234. Does the idea of working fewer hours, maybe even at the same pay, seem like a good idea, or is it too good to be true? Do you feel burned out working 40 hours or more a week? Even if you do like your job, what do you think about the four 10-hour day schedule? If you own or manage a business, what do you think a four-day work week would do for your, say, scheduling and hiring? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Peter Capelli is the George W. Taylor Professor of Management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania and Director of Wharton's Center for Human Resources. Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Before we get into the specifics of the four-day work week concept, Peter, in this year into the pandemic world, do you see a lot of business owners and managers maybe more open to different ideas about how they run their workplaces than they might have been pre-pandemic?
I think so. I think especially on this issue of working from home, before the pandemic, we more or less just let local managers make the decision. And, there was one group of managers that thought if you're working from home, you were watching Gilligan's Island all day and you were just goofing off. And the others had thought, as long as you get your work done, it doesn't matter. And the problem with that was, or one of the problems, you could be in the same company working for this person, doing exactly the same job. They'd let you work from home, working for this other person, maybe even across the hall, and they wouldn't. And it was, largely about their view of human nature. It didn't have anything to do with evidence. But now they got a little more evidence. So I think we're going to see companies taking away that discretion and having more general principles that allow more people to work from home.
I love that Gilligan's Island is the go-to for work at home slackers. I'm going to assume that's always what people are watching. Now, the four-day work week, and people have been talking about this idea for a long time now. It's getting this look in Spain. And the people who argue for this say, actually, if we work less, we actually get more done with our time. There's more productivity. Do you see evidence to support that, though, Peter?
Yeah, probably not, to be honest, which doesn't mean that it's not true. It's just this question of evidence. So you might ask your listeners this, do they really have a good idea, or do they think their employer has a good idea how productive one person is as opposed to another person? We don't measure individual productivity very well at all. I think what happened in the pandemic was that managers did realize, though, that the earth didn't, and the sky didn't fall when people were working from home. They didn't notice any difference. Now, that doesn't mean there wasn't a difference. It just meant that they maybe weren't even all that good at being able to tell. So I don't think we're going to see, dramatic improvements in that area. I think the four-day work week and these efforts, particularly in Europe, to reduce working hours came from a kind of different notion, particularly in France. And that notion was the idea that there were only so many jobs around, only so much work to be done. And if you could scale it back, it would actually create more jobs, And there was a joke at the time when this started in France that there was some sort of conference where the French were meeting Californian workers and Silicon Valley workers. And they were talking about this, I think it was 37-hour week or something like that in France. And the Silicon Valley guys said, "That's great. Then you could work two jobs, right?" And it just, defeated the whole purpose of thinking about it, right? But I don't think there's any evidence that the French were right about that. And I don't think there's any good evidence in France that it actually helped create any more jobs. So I think that idea, which was part of the motivation for cutting back work hours, doesn't seem to be right. That doesn't mean the other ones couldn't be right. Certainly might be better for people. And, it's possible you might get just as much done as if you worked more hours. It is certainly true that if you start really upping the hours of work, productivity per hour begins to drop really fast.
I know there's a concern among employers, especially at places where, you know, you have to have some people on the job. If you're at a store or a call center or a restaurant, whatever, you need people in there. If everybody's working fewer hours, you're going to need more employees to cover those calendars. And there's a certain fixed cost per employee. How big an obstacle Sure. do you see that being?
Well, I think in those cases, it is a big obstacle. I think if we're thinking about what is it that employees really want, I think one of the things broadly is let's do something about kind of egregious overwork. This is particularly where people who were non-exempt, that is, they were covered by the Fair Labor Standards Act. So if you started working more than 40 hours a week, you had to be paid overtime. When those people and that kind of work gets moved to exempt, which means you're paid a salary, you're not paid by the hour. Once you're in that category, there's no limits on your hours of work, right? And there's no overtime pay. So in those cases, we see, you know, like store managers and those things, right? We see the hours of work effectively just going up and up and up. And on those folks, they might find they're working 55, 60 hours a week or so. So, you know, it's the problem is not so much the average hours of work, which frankly don't sound all that bad, the average in the economy. It's the people who are really being pushed to do more and more and more without overtime pay. Those are the people who are really being kind of pushed around here.
We're talking to Peter Capelli, professor of management at the University of Pennsylvania, looking at the idea of the four-day work week, which might mean a 32-hour work week. And we want to hear what you think of the concept, pro or con, or a little of both, and your questions, too, at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Heather is with us in Oregon. Heather, hi.
Hi. Okay, so I'm for it. I think we can maybe get closer to an actual normal work week. But and what your expert had to say was some of the things that I had to say, which is France did it because they were trying to basically spread, you know, X numbers of hours over Y number of people and therefore employ a greater percentage of the population. I don't think that that's our problem in our country. I think we have a shortage of labor, if you look at it. But our issue is literally what he said, which is we have too many people who are being pushed to work more, more, more. It's the do more with less problem. So I'm hopeful that this might stop that. But my question is, how is this going to be enforced? Because in France, what you saw was that they would literally raid businesses. In fact, I was there watching it on TV when I was over there doing business for our biotech company. And they were raiding construction sites and restaurants, which were the two businesses that were most likely to basically break the rules. And they literally have police that go in the front of the restaurant, and you see the employees run out the back of the kitchen, and the cops are chasing them. And it would make for great comedy TV, but the question is, how do we enforce it?
Interesting, Heather. Thanks a lot for sharing that. Peter, how do we enforce we enforce 40-hour work weeks for some people, sort of. How would enforcement work, do you think?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. The U.S. Department of Labor is the biggest enforcement agency in the federal government. And, you know, this falls to their wage and hour division to do. And, you know, it is a good question about whether we are enforcing that well enough. If you look at the people who study what they call wage theft, which is people not getting overtime pay or not getting breaks, you know, they seem to indicate that it's quite widespread. You know, it's not that difficult to enforce this if you had the will to do it. But, you know, there are political debates on this, right? There are people who believe that employers are already overburdened by regulations and complying with these things just gets picky. And so we shouldn't spend a lot of time and effort trying to enforce it. And then there are those who believe there are a lot of violations and we should, right? So you see this battle between the Democrats and Republicans. You've seen it in Wisconsin. You see it at the federal level. And, you know, you see the Democrats imposing new regulations and then you see the Republicans trying to cut them or not funding them so you can't actually execute them, you know. So a lot of these issues are really about political differences and political will. What do you really want to do? And I think when push comes to shove, we discover that we're just not agreeing on what it is we want to do. And that's the heart of the problem.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Vince now in Madison. Vince, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if you might speak to how you think this might affect income disparities between salary and hourly workers. Thank you.
Vince, thanks for the call. Is there a salary disparity, first of all, between us salaried and hourly workers, and would this affect it, do you think, Peter?
Well, I think it might affect the living standard differences, the quality of life differences, right? So I think right now the people who come off the worst on this are the people who are just above the hourly wage positions. So these are lower level supervisors and store managers and those folks who don't get overtime hours, but end up getting overtime work effectively, you know, lots more things that have to be done than could be done in a 40-hour work week. So I think what would happen then if you could pull those folks, those hours of those folks down or give them, you know, overtime pay, is that the jobs would be a little more equivalent. I mean, you're actually probably almost better off not being a supervisor in those circumstances because your hours of work, you don't make as much money maybe, but your hours of work are nowhere near as great. So I don't know that it would probably address income inequality as much as it would those gaps for the lower level white collar workers where they find their hours of work are just really up, but their pay doesn't go up with it.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about the pros and cons of the four-day work week with Peter Capelli, professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, director of Wharton's Center for Human Resources. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the idea of making the norm a four-day work week? What would you do with the extra time? Do you feel like you'd have a better work-life balance? Should it be a law that we have this, or would you like to see individual businesses give it a shot? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about four-day work weeks, a concept that's been getting a fresh look since the pandemic. Some researchers say working fewer hours at the same pay might boost productivity. Others say it would result in staffing and scheduling challenges. Peter Capelli is with us, professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, as a political conservative, I would love something like this, but the real issue would be, isn't this the best use of unions, where you definitely have workers being abused by keeping them on a salary and then abusing them on through an hourly work schedule? This is where unions should be strong to protect workers from being abused. And they can then negotiate whether it's a five-day week work week, four-day work week, or whatever work week works best for the company as well as the worker. But we should not have workers being abused, and that is where the unions should be most active. Thanks for my call.
Charlie, thanks a lot for the call. And I know, Peter, union supporters credit unions with helping create what we have now as the 40-hour work week standard, but unions have declined a lot in the recent decades. Do you see a role for unions in trying to negotiate for these kind of working times and changes?
Yeah, a lot of people, I think, have held the view of your caller. And you know, as he says, a lot of conservatives have that view that this is something we should work out at the local level. You know, the problem is unions are so weak, and it's not just the fault of unions, right? We spent a lot of time and a lot of political energy and a lot of lobbying to make sure that they stay weak. So, you know, the problem is as a political solution to just say unions should do that doesn't mean very much because they can't do it. You know, they can't get organized. It's difficult for them to get members. It's easy to stop. You're seeing some stories in the paper now about practices at Amazon and elsewhere that are pretty aggressive. And, you know, even some things that might violate the law, like if I'm an employer and I can fire people who support the union, that's violates the law, but it's not the criminal law, it's civil law. And, you know, what happens as a result of that? The National Labor Relations Board may say, okay, you fired those folks illegally, but that's 2 years later, the election's over, there's no union, right? So, you know, I think as a practical matter, it's not going anywhere, at least not until the unions somehow get much stronger. And frankly, I'm not betting on that anytime soon unless the political environment changes in a big way. So we're left with something else. I think the idea that employers should sort of figure this out and where it works, do it, sounds great. But I think one thing to remember about employers is they're just people, right? I mean, they're just people like everybody else. They've got the same limitations, particularly in the academic world. We often think that they're this rational calculating machine, you know, that employers have figured out the absolute best way to do everything and they've analyzed things. And none of that's true. I mean, nobody has time to do that or the ability or the energy. So they go with rules of thumb, you know, just ideas that sound right, you know. So it's largely about ideas. And I think, you know, the idea that you might actually get more productivity by people working less hours and ultimately more performance out of them just doesn't sound right to people. And so it's not going to go anywhere unless we can persuade them that this might actually be true. And in terms of the evidence and things, we're still a little ways from that. You know, there are places right now where they've got 4-day work weeks. 25% of the U.S. workforce has shift work already. And where you have shifts, for example, in healthcare, it's not uncommon now for nurses to work 3-day weeks. They work 3 12-hour shifts, right? And the reason there is there's a particular need for people to stay with the same patients as long as possible because you get that continuity of care. But that's not likely to be the case in an insurance company or someplace else, right? So I think if we ever see a 4-day work week, it will be business by business, industry by industry. It's not something that's going to work across the economy. It just doesn't fit lots of places.
Thanks for the call, Charlie. We're talking to Peter Capelli from the University of Pennsylvania, professor of management there, looking at the idea of a 4-day work week and taking your many calls. Back to you. Barbara is with us now in Hudson. Barbara, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Barbara?
My question to the experts is this. If we transition from a 40-hour work week to a 32-hour work week, how does that translate to healthcare benefits and benefits as full-time employees? Would that follow across the board? Would a 32-hour work week still retain your benefits?
Barbara, thanks for the call. And that is an interesting and huge question, Peter, if we change our standard work week.
Yeah, well, there's no reason why it couldn't or shouldn't. You know, there are employers who make decisions about not giving people healthcare benefits in particular if they're working part-time status, right? And, you know, given those policies that employers have, if they cut you below that, then you'd have a problem. But, you know, if employers wanted to introduce lower work weeks, they could probably do it, right, without losing your benefits. I think the problem, though, is that, you know, let's be real. Employees want lots of things, and we don't get it, right? And that's not too surprising. Some of these things cost money to do. Some of them are hard to do. So where we might make progress is if you could see some reason why the employer might want them as well. So, for example, if you said, would I be willing to take a lower wage for a shorter work week, right? Now, if you could do that, maybe you might entice more employers to think that way, at least in those jobs where it might make sense to not have 40-hour work weeks for people. You know, the problem in offices is, at least before the pandemic, we had 5-day work schedules. We had meetings scheduled 5 days a week. And if you've got a bunch of people who are only coming in 4 days a week, you know, it sort of complicates life if you're trying to get meetings done and things like that. But, you know, we'll see now that enough employees have been working remotely anyway. Does it matter that much if you're working a 4-day work week, if we've just gotten through a period where you weren't there at all? You know, maybe employers are used to it and they'd be more open to it if they saw a business reason to do it. And I think that's still the problem. How does it help them to do that? That's not so clear.
Thanks for the call. Tim joins us next in Pembine. Tim, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Tim?
Okay. Yeah, I I'm planning on getting business in the near future, like pretty soon, and I'm thinking about how to schedule people and all this. And but the one thing that keeps coming to my mind, and I've been thinking about it for a while, and has been kind of locked onto it. There's studies that say that people's minds work physically, taxable, you know, all the different phases you use your mind. After 6 hours, your brain starts to shut down. The human brain starts to shut down after 6 hours of work. So you notice, like, even people that are older, you know, been on their diet, I guess, and their hormones and all that, that they slow down more, you know, the energy, even to have the energy. So
I got you, Tim. We just have a minute or two left. Peter, I mean, we've all felt that kind of brain fog at the end of a long work day. Is that anecdotal or is there something to that?
Well, mine shuts down much sooner than that, I must say. I don't even get a full 6 hours myself. I think, you know, it's an argument about taking breaks. It is true more generally that once people get really tired, their productivity really, really falls. And, you know, that was a big issue in healthcare, right? It's an issue with these nurses who are working 12-hour shifts. So there's something to that. I think that's an argument that makes people concerned about fewer days and longer hours, right? If you're working a 10-hour shift rather than an 8-hour shift, does that last 2 hours, additional 2 hours, just burnout time? That might not matter if what you're doing doesn't require a lot of cognitive energy, but if it does, maybe that's something we want to think about. I think flexibility is really what employees most want. And is there a way to give them more of that, where they might work from home for a little bit? They might have more control over their hours, and particularly they might get more vacation time, which is something we've been really bad at in the U.S.
We'll leave it there, Peter. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Peter Capelli is a professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, director there of the Center for Human Resources. We talked to him about the pros and cons of a 4-day work week. Heard from a lot of you on email and Facebook, by the way. Brandy says, I've done 4 10-hour shifts. It was awesome. If you did work an overtime day, you still had 2 days off. And Janine says, I switched to a 4 8-hour day work week as a way to transition into retirement. Learned I won't have any problem finding things to keep me busy in retirement, using the time to art journal, write real letters, so and more. You can keep sharing your thoughts and experiences on the Ideas Network Facebook page.